Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Doing Well, the Wellbeing Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I am your host, Lu Ngo, coming to your ears from NARM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's learn together. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Doing Well. And on this week's episode, we are talking about the neuroscience of personal growth with Marie McLeod in our studio. So glad to have you here in person, Marie. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for bringing this in. This is so great. I want to introduce this in a little bit so it makes sense to our audience who are tuning into the video version of this podcast. Marie is the director of Wellbeing Innovation, How to Thrive Film, positive psychotherapist. She is also the creator of Beacon and the award-winning How to Thrive Wellbeing programs, which is attached to this little thing here. This little card here is really cool and it has the Beacon framework on it. And we'll talk about it in a sec. Before we get there, let's talk a bit more about you, Marie. Let's get to know you better. So I'm very curious because I told you I've already watched the film. Thank you for sharing it with me. I've never talked to anyone who has made the film. And, you know, I got to watch the film before the podcast. So it's even more recent. It's fresh in my mind. It's inspiring to, you know, see the stories of these seven people. So I'm sure it hasn't been like something you just woke up one day and like, you know what, I'm going to make a film. You know, it has to be a whole journey. And I would love to know what that journey has been like, you know, for you to be so inspired to make that film.
Oh, thanks, Lou. It's so lovely to be here. And thank you for taking the time to watch the film. So you're quite right. It didn't happen just like that. And in fact, it wasn't even my brainchild. The filmmakers, Dee and Andy from Beyond Edge, they had been thinking about this for a long time. Dee is a first-generation Vietnamese refugee, and he had for a long time, I guess, been thinking about, well, I guess he wanted to make a film, but also thinking about the sort of the recognition from him that he had a really difficult childhood, you know, coming through refugee camps, you know, when he was around kind of 3 and 4, and noticing that over the course of his life that some of the people that were with him in those times continued through life and ended up resilient and thriving and happy, and others took another path and, you know, were traumatized and experiencing addiction and other things. And so he was always very curious about, you know, what is it that differentiates people in that way? And so he'd started to kind of do some research around, is there a secret formula to happiness? And so it was in his kind of quest and in his research, I guess, that he discovered me and the work that I was doing. And he came and I was actually running a program with young people at Headspace, the National Youth Mental Health Service here in Australia. And he came and listened to the young people after I'd run a program, and he was just called me the next day and he's like, that's the film. That's the film I want to make. I want to make, a film where we look at the well-being science and the possibility that that has as a new approach to supporting people to thrive. And so he asked me, I was really reluctant at first, but he's a very persuasive man. And so we then began to have conversations and, you know, as they say, you know, the rest is history, but there was a lot of water under the bridge. But yeah, we're really, really proud of what we've been able to do.
Yeah, that's super cool. I'm from a Vietnamese background, so hearing that, you know, there's a person from a Vietnamese background doing the film, I was like, oh, that's even better. But what about your professional journey though? Because I'm sure he didn't identify you to join the film out of nowhere. There's got to be a reason, right? So what about the background of your work prior to this film?
Yeah, so I guess I'm probably one of those people that from a very young age, like I was really attracted to, what does it take to live a good life? How can we help people to live better? I think I was like an old soul and, you know, from being very young, people used to tell me their issues, risks and problems. And I really prided myself on finding a solution to things. And so it was no surprise that I left home from the farm in New Zealand before finishing school, and I went to the UK and I nannied and I was an au pair. And then as soon as I could, I entered university and studied social work. And I did child protection at first and then juvenile justice and disability, and then began an approach looking at community level wellbeing. And all of the time, I guess, focused on how can we fix issues and problems. And I guess for me, it wasn't until I had children, which was a very difficult time for me, that I began to look at things differently and learnt the science of wellbeing and positive psychology, which now informs my work so much. So I guess I developed, and I was asked to develop a program that was positive psychology informed, by a community health service who they, I guess, had identified that what they were doing just wasn't working. And they had clients with mental health issues. They had extremely qualified and competent clinicians working with those people, but they were just like boomerangs. They just kept coming back. And they were like, Marie, what can we do differently? So I created a program that was informed by the science of positive psychology, and we'll get into that a little bit more later, to see if we could kind of shift the dial for those people. And then I guess that was incredibly successful, and we measured it and we ran it again. And it was kind of cutting edge, I guess, to use positive psychology in that space where people's mental health is suboptimal. And so I guess if Dee was here talking about it, he would explain my work as one of the people that translates the science. So he would say there's a lot of research and there's a lot of academic journals, and they're all sitting away and gathering dust, not really seeing the light of day. And that really frustrated him. He was like, this science needs to be out there. This needs to be something available to people, because all they have right now is the kind of mainstream clinical psychology and psychiatry, and that is not enough. So when he found me, he describes that he found someone who was the conduit from that science and that academic research into something that was practical for everyday people. And I guess that's what's kind of driven us, is how can we now package that up in a way and get it out to people so that there are more options when you are struggling, but also that people can learn these things proactively and preventatively. And ideally, they're learning in school so that, you know, alongside learning to read and write, you also learn practical ways to live well and to thrive.
Yeah, that's really cool. And we'll talk about that more, right? So I'm excited to learn more about that bit of positive psychology, because, you know, it's more practical, I would say. Especially what I saw in the film is way more practical than what I've read, because I do like reading up on psychology, which is why I'm doing this work and talking to you right now. But yeah, it's really cool to see, you know, everyday people. And I'm sure a lot of people out there struggling with different things, just like the seven people that got featured on the, in the film. So we'll talk about that very soon. But before we do, we have a section called Have You Met Marie? And we're going to get to know you better through some of the things that you love. First of all, I would love to know what your favorite book is.
Oh, gosh. I'm not very good at doing a one favorite.
You can do multiple.
Well, I have a book that I've been enjoying. You know how you know that you like something if you find yourself telling other people about it quite a few times. And so I don't know exactly why it's my favourite, but there's an Australian author called Graham Simerson, and he's written a book and then a series actually called The Rosie Project. Have you heard of it?
No.
So there's The Rosie Project, The Rosie Effect and The Rosie Result. And the the main person in the book is a kind of science professor at a university, and he is autistic. He doesn't know that at all, and but the way that he goes about life, he starts out looking for a wife, and he goes about it in a very sort of systematic, structured way, and it's just the perfect mix of being funny and authentic and real and just gorgeous. And because I have a son with autism, and you know, people around me, I just loved the way that and so then he kind of follows it through where he does meet someone and then they have a baby and the three books. So I've just been loving that. And I think that it's a really useful book as well. It is a novel, but there's so much about it that enables us to better understand neurodiversity through something that is light and funny.
Yeah.
So I have found myself recommending that quite a few times.
And yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good one.
Wow. That's a good book series, I would say. Yeah. By an Australian author. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll put that on my list. And what about a movie you've enjoyed recently?
Well, my husband and my kids would be going, oh, God, don't ask Mum that because she's really hopeless at remembering. There's something that I watched recently which I really liked. It's actually based on a Swedish book. It's called A Man Named Otto. And you'll notice a theme here because I always like them because they're entertaining, but they also have an element of kind of a lesson to them. So this is about a grumpy old man who has lost his wife, and he basically just thinks, you know, woe is me. I'm just going to be unhappy forever now because my wife isn't here and she was the kind of, you know, light of my life. But he has this beautiful neighbor that just will not give up and just kind of keeps on pestering him with little positive things and inviting him and asking him for things. And there's just this beautiful friendship that evolves with her persistence towards the positive. And eventually he really finds his way back to being happy. And I just think it's a beautiful example of the power of community, which we all could do with a bit more of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I wonder if you're a podcast listener by any chance. If you are, then which show or shows would be your favorite?
Well, I do listen to quite a few different ones. One that I have been enjoying recently, which has been a bit different, is Slow Mo, which is Mo Gaudat. I don't know. Do you know that one?
No, I haven't heard of that yet.
So Mo Gaudat is, he was the chief operating officer for Google X. So he's like an engineer scientist kind of guy, and very, very sort of scientific in his thinking. And he was like, you know, had a great life, a lot of money and everything, but always thinking about, you know, what does it take to be happy? But sadly, he lost his son. His son died really young and unexpectedly. And in the course of recovering from that, he's kind of come up with this, what he thinks is the scientific equation for happiness. And so I heard him interviewed by someone on another podcast that led me to his podcast, which is called Slow Mo. And he interviews very amazing, interesting people. He's based in, I think, from like the Middle East, Egypt or somewhere like that. But a lot of people are in the UK, which is a little bit outside the kind of people that I would normally get to hear. So I've been enjoying that. I just really like his approach. He's like really upbeat and happy and it's good.
Yeah, that's cool. I should check that out. Thank you for sharing. And finally, I would love to know about a course you've taken. Now, this could be from a long time ago or something recently that has really inspired you.
Well, so this year, because so I have twins that just turned 19 and I have a 16-year-old. So my twins finished school last year. So this is a new year for me as I find my way to having less parenting responsibilities, or so I thought. And so I was like, oh, well, I need to do some things for myself. I need to kind of start, you know, hobbies or learning or whatever. So a friend of mine was doing a philosophy course to be honest, didn't even really know what philosophy was, but I thought, well, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll join her. So there is a place in Melbourne called the School of Philosophy, and they had a course called The Wisdom Within.
Oh.
Yeah. So I've been doing that, and I went along and I felt really kind of awkward at first, because a lot of people in the class were studying philosophy at university, and they kind of but I have really been really, really surprised and really enjoying that.
Yeah, that's really cool that you just randomly found this course and enjoy it.
I know. I was at first, the first 45 minutes of the first class, I was just thinking, what have you done? This is dreadful. I don't think I'm going to be able to stay. But yeah, I actually really have got into it and really getting a lot out of it.
Yeah. So how many classes have you taken?
So I think we maybe have taken around 5, and it's a 10-week course.
Okay. Halfway there.
Halfway there.
Interesting. Yeah. I actually don't know much about philosophy either.
I didn't either. But the trick is that this is practical philosophy.
Okay.
Yeah. I think if you just went to one and it was just the navel gazing kind of, you know, what is the meaning of life? I think I would get very frustrated. But this is actually very practical, and you go away and there's things that you kind of practice each week. So for me, I like that. And there's been some really like helpful perspectives and practices. So
good. Nice. That is so fun.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. That is definitely fascinating. I did not expect that. very interesting and random. But I guess it works, you know, especially when you talk about well-being and different aspects of life. Maybe there's something you can relate there.
Oh,
In a bit. You can share with us what you've learned in the class. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about today's topic, you know, the neuroscience of personal growth. I think personal growth is that topic that gets talked about quite often. And I think from your perspective, it might get a new light, especially because you've worked with so many individuals. So this is more practical. You've seen a lot of stories and you've actually worked with people to change their stories by rewiring their brain. Before we get there, though, you are the well-being expert here. So I would love to know from your perspective, could be your personal perspective combined with the science. What do you think of well-being?
So yeah, I guess for me, we're very deliberate about the words that we use. And it is a bit contentious, actually, because if you see the film, and even on here, probably it says how to thrive, a practical guide to happiness. So right there in one sentence, you've got thriving and you've got happiness, but we would describe them quite differently. So, you know, for me, I would use the word thriving to be well-being. And for me, the most basic way that I would say that is that it is a consistent feeling or a consistent state of feeling good and functioning well. Mm. Now, what does that mean? You know, that kind of rolls off the tongue. For me, what that means is that it's about having energy. It's about feeling connected. It's about having a kind of calm and confident way of being, and really just feeling alive. And I think it's important, though, two things. One, it's important to know that we can't feel like that all the time. Mm. Like, it's just not normal for us to always feel at the top of our game. But what is possible, and I guess my life work is about, is how can we learn and apply ways to be as well as we can be as often as we can be, right? And I think that needs to be differentiated between thriving and what we might call happiness, because happiness is not a consistent state.
Mm.
Happiness is something that is an experience of an emotion that can rise and fall in a moment. Mm. So that's where we get those kind of myths and misconceptions, and actually unhappiness created in the pursuit of happiness. Mm. Because a lot of people think, I'll be happy when ... I'll be happy when I have a holiday. I'll be happy when I get a pay rise. I'll be happy when I get a promotion. I'll be happy when I get a new car, a new house. I'll be happy when I have a child. I'll be happy when the children leave home. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're always nexting. We're always thinking that happiness will come as a result of something. But the reality is that thing comes and we get it and we get that sort of pay rise or whatever, and we feel happy or we feel and experience a positive emotion for a moment or a month, but then it goes away again, leaving us disappointed and disillusioned. And the reason that that happens is because our brain adapts to things. And this is maybe something we want to talk about a little bit more, is this, you know, the way that our brain kind of responds in that way that it's not always particularly helpful.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think that's so true. And the interesting thing here is, you know, there's a lot of mention of well-being, happiness, and thriving in the same sentence.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of the overlap area that we should probably touch on a little bit, because this show is about well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another show about happiness science called CeraBoost. And your work is kind of inclusive of both.
Yes.
So to our audience who might be wondering, okay, Marie, so, you know, I understand that you're saying, you know, your definition of well-being is thriving. What about that difference between happiness and well-being in this context? Would there be any difference, or is it the same thing with thriving?
So I think, to me, I equate thriving and well-being as being the same thing. I mean, we might break it down into thinking about physical well-being and mental well-being. And for me, it's a combination of those that lead to us feeling like we're thriving. And really the difference between that and happiness is whether or not it's fleeting or more consistent. And so, you know, I think, as I said, we chase after this elusive happiness, where we falsely believe that a thing or a moment will lead to happiness. And you know, the notion, or the the unfortunate thing about our brains is that they have this incredible adaption system. It's called hedonic adaption. And that's really good for us when bad things happen, because our brain has a way of adapting back to how things were before. But unfortunately, the same thing happens when good things happen. So, you know, we do get the pay rise or the holiday, and we go, "Whoa, up! I feel so great! You know, I'm absolutely delighted. I'm thrilled. I'm joyful. This is novel. It's new. It's what I've wanted." And our brain goes, "Whoa, okay." And our reward system is sort of all firing, but then it goes, "Ah, this is normal now." You know, so that hedonic adaption means that good stuff happens, we return to baseline. Bad stuff happens, we return to baseline. So, you know, that aspect of our brain is worth us understanding, because it does make it a little bit tricky for us. And what it does mean is that really what we want to be aiming for is thriving, not happiness, and evening out that sort of that state of feeling well and functioning well in a more consistent way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think that is something that a lot of people struggle with, though, because even though we have learned that there's that hedonic adaptation, we still let it take control or take over.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about personal growth today, and I think that's, as I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, it's not a new topic. Everybody talks about personal growth. And I think as we go through life, there will be a lot of different stages in life where we go through things like stress, challenges. And, you know, a lot of people go through depression, anxiety. It's on the rise nowadays, especially in the West, right? So, you know, it's not a new thing to say, okay, understanding this will help us to thrive. Your word, right? The word thrive. And a big part of that is understanding how our brain works, because hedonic adaptation is exactly what's happening in our brain. Then we don't understand it, or we understand it, we forget about it, and then we go back to a stage where we're struggling when we already have the tool.
Yeah.
So, you know, how can understanding our brain, or, you know, understanding the neuroscience of our brain really help us to help foster that sense of personal growth? Because it's a journey, right? It doesn't stop when we have grown from something, like from point A to B. It's sort of like we're just going to keep growing even when we are old.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's super important, because it would be easy for us to think that our brain controlled us, right? And then if that was the case, then we might as well just give up and go home and just think, well, I am what I am. It is what it is. I don't have any control over how happy or unhappy or thriving or not I feel. And that is not actually the case, right? So I think we might think about that analogy of the elephant and the rider. You know, the elephant is huge. If you're sitting on top of it, you're very small. A little bit like, you know, with our brains that we like that, like if we are sitting on the top of that elephant, we are the driver of it and we need to learn to steer it and to say, well, hang on, we're going this way, we're going that way. In the same way, we need to learn to believe and to take action to control and lead and manage our brains and our impulses, right? Because sadly, our brains' wiring is oftentimes an active saboteur of, you know, it sabotages our well-being if we let it get away. Because our brain will say, oh, you know, come home, we've recorded podcasts today, that was really hard, it was stressful, it's a hot day, we get back home, we think, oh, you know, I'll have a beer, I'll sit down and watch the telly, I'll eat ice cream because, you know, I've had a hard day. And that is absolutely not the kind of thing that the science says will help us to thrive.
Mm.
So we have to override that impulse of our brain. And so I guess there's a few things about this, and one is knowing that we can, right? And the next thing is knowing the substitute behaviors, right? And so both of those things are important. So when we think about our brains and how they help and hinder us, I guess it wasn't that long ago that we thought our brains couldn't be changed. You know, we thought, well, you're born like that, you stay like that. But that's not the case. We understand now neuroplasticity. We understand that we can rewire our brains. We can change our brains with effort. And so that point alone is a really empowering. And so, you know, for me, when I'm working with people and they are not thriving, one of the most important starting points is how do you instill in them a sense of hope and a belief that it is possible to change and grow and learn and be better on the other side of that adversity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's overall the understanding that we can get better and can be better from the very start. It's the awareness stage. It's not even the action stage yet, right? Because a lot of people kind of like, oh, this is just me, accept it. And I think that is actually quite dangerous to say, right? Because if we are acceptant of the fact that, oh, you know what? Yeah, this is just how it's going to be my whole life. I'm just going to be like this, I'm not going to change. That is exactly the opposite of thriving that you're talking about in this context.
Well, we need to be careful because there is a time and a place for acceptance in order to help us thrive, and there is a time and a place for accountability when it comes to thriving, and we need to learn to understand the nuance of the difference between those things. So it's about understanding what we have control over and what we don't, right?
Mm, yeah.
And so this particular bit that we're talking about now is understanding that we do and can have some control over our brains. And so this, I guess, leads me to a point of thinking about the mindsets that we hold, right?
Yeah.
Because, and this comes from Professor Carol Dweck from Stanford, and she talks about these two mindsets, a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. And a fixed mindset says, you know, well, I am what I am, it is what it is, and there's nothing that I can do to change it.
Yeah.
And if we hold that mindset, and many of us do, and we might hold fixed mindsets in some areas of our life and not others, then that is a mindset that's fear-based, right? It's like I'm always going around thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I might not have what it takes here. Whereas a growth mindset is the belief that we can grow and change and get better based on the effort that we put in. Right? It's not going to happen without the effort, but we can be intentional and we can choose and we can set goals and then we can be really gritty and persevere towards those goals. Because, you know, rewiring a brain is not like super simple. It's not just like you do something once. It's a bit like with our physical health, where we'd think, oh, you know, one visit to the gym or one piece of broccoli is going to make us physically fit. Well, it's not. You know, it's the same, you know, with our mental health and our the wiring in our brain has been happening over many years, almost like a road that has been worn with the cars driving over it many, many, many times. And so you can make new roads, but you have to be prepared to drive over them many times in order for them to become you know, a new path that's natural for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But what about the nuances that you mentioned, right? Because we probably would know about the fixed mindset and growth mindset from the book Mindset by Carol Dweck you mentioned. Mm-hmm. But I'm now thinking about the fact that this probably will not apply to all individuals in all contexts. If we think about what we do have control over, that applies. But if we are generalizing what it is, a lot of people might get offended, perhaps, because they have certain conditions or things that cannot be changed. And I'm talking about, you know, people on the spectrum or, you know, different things that people go through, life circumstances, could be anything. So where do we find that balance? You know, of course, we can learn and grow and change, you know, through rewiring our brain. But I guess there's a certain extent to how much we can change.
Yeah.
And who can change.
Yep. I think that's a very good point. I think that's a very good point. And I think that absolutely the kind of the devil's in the detail around that, isn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of, and so I think where we think about what we have control over and what we don't, there is some individual aspects about that. Like you kind of mentioned an example of autism. So there is, you know, neurodiversity and, you know, people who have diversity about how their brain works. Can you rewire that completely? I don't know for sure, but I don't, that's not something that I've heard spoken about. Mm. But what we can do is have people practice and things that matter to them so that they can learn and be in ways that work well for them. Like in the Rosie Project, you know, the guy Dan Tillman, he kind of, you know, as he becomes a man who is married and a father, there are certain ways that he learns to adapt so that he can form bonds with other people, for example. Now, I guess each of us needs to consider the scope of control that we have and the degree of effort that we're prepared to put in.
Yeah.
I think there is some research that says, you know, it takes 8,000 to 10,000 hours of deliberate practice to learn something new.
Yeah.
So we want to be intentional about the goals we set, right?
Yeah.
And really what we do want to do, Lou, is we really want to better understand our strengths and go with them rather than trying to change a weakness.
Yep.
So, yes, we can do all of these things, but we want to be discerning about our choices. And if I'm working with people, I will be encouraging them to better understand all of the things that they're good at and that work well for them and really lean into that and only do the hard work around things that really matter because that's a lot harder to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really worth understanding is just control what you can and let go of the rest and then kind of pick your battles and where you can just move towards the light, you know, move towards your strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that is probably support as well, right? Because sometimes we talk about personal growth as if it's a standalone project. It's like this isolated thing that you have to do by yourself. But in fact, you cannot do it by yourself. And I think a lot of people have accountability buddies for that reason.
Yeah.
You know, and some people get help from their loved ones or people that care about them. And that helps them to actually foster the growth mindset without them even knowing in a way, maybe even similar to your program. I don't know how the individuals in the film were identified, but I would say you know, like the fact that they ended up in this journey is probably a deliberate process, or somebody else might nominate them, or, you know, even throughout this process of rewiring their brain, they got a lot of support from others. Mm-hmm. And no one can do this by themselves. Mm-hmm. So for those that are struggling a bit more, you know, especially people that are neurodiverse, I probably think that there needs to be more support. So it depends on each person's circumstance.
Yeah. And, you know, like I want to go on record and say I'm uncomfortable really in thinking that we would be talking about rewiring someone who's neurodiverse because, well, I'm going to put it out there and say I have ADHD, right? So I myself am neurodiverse. Mm. Do I think I need to rewire myself away from that? Mm. There are some things that don't serve me, some things that make life more difficult for me. And so I can work towards being better at those, but the better way for me to do it is to recognize those and, as you say, have people that can plug the gaps for me and then just really embrace all the things that are brilliant about my mind.
Yeah.
So in terms of neurodiversity, I'm very strongly of the mind that it's about difference, not deficit. And, you know,
yeah,
my approach is always strengths-based. It's always like understand,
yeah,
you know, what is strong here rather than what is wrong here, and how we can just illuminate all of those things and stay in the zone of our strengths as often as we can. Mm-hmm. In terms of the participants in the documentary, many of those people were struggling mental health issues or other life challenges and struggles. So those are different because those are more transient states, right? Whereas neurodiversity is not a transient state. And so my perspective is that, and, you know, this is just my perspective and I'm, you know, other people might think differently, but this is something that I'm setting out to challenge. I believe that thriving and struggle are not mutually exclusive, right?
Totally.
I believe that we can experience struggle and also be thriving or doing things to help us to thrive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are people who suffer from mental health issues for many, many years, and I've worked with some of those people and they have tried so many other practices. You know, by the time they get to me, they've done, you know, they can rattle off 10 different kind of therapies and programs that they've done. And I think the difference is that all of those things are kind of looking backward and they're swirling around in the issues, the risks and problems, you know, of the deficit, the disorder and the diagnosis. But when we meet people where they're at and we say, well, let's just take you where you are today and understand strengths and move towards any aspects of your life that are good. And then we give them practical things they can do and they get a little lift from doing that. Mm. And then, you know, it grows because, you know, our brains are wired to perform better when they feel positive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we do something that lifts us a little bit, we begin to open up and then we add something else and we add something else. So there is a lot of I guess, hacking that we do when it comes to the support that we provide.
Yeah.
And yep, support's important, but there's also a big gap that many people don't have around the education piece of thriving as opposed to therapy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think there are a lot of nuances if we really go into the details, just like you said earlier, the devil's in the detail. And the disclaimer here, I guess, there will be two things that you briefly touched on, and I want to mention it to our audience because, you know, if you're really struggling and you don't know what's going on, you really need support and help, and you identify as a neurodiverse individual, there might be other kinds of help.
Yeah.
This is probably not what we're talking about right now.
No.
And the other thing is about mental health issues. You know, obviously, I am really supportive of people who seek therapy, but at the same time, I myself also am aware that it's not always that, you know, available to all of us. Mm-hmm. So if someone really struggles and really needs help, there are a lot of programs out there that would support people with mental health issues. There are lifeline supports, you know, and you can call different helplines. And what we're talking about today is more so for those that feel like they can get back into control and they just need support from people around them rather than, you know, professional mental health support. So there's a lot going on in this space, I guess. Yeah. And it's not like we are trying to downplay the fact that, you know,
that's right.
You don't need support. Mm-hmm. I think we all need support. It depends on what kind of support we're talking about. Yeah. So yeah, for this conversation, we're talking about, you know, like life struggles. So different life struggles that we might encounter. And this happens to all of us at one point or another, right? So I think this is more about learning about the tool and what we can do to help ourselves, if we can, of course. If we find ourselves to be at a stage where, you know what, this is too much, I need professional support, that's different. Yeah. So going back to the story of, okay, we are going to talk to individuals who might be struggling with different things in life right now. Life's hard, as we all know. Mm-hmm. We learned this from your documentary. If our audience have not seen the documentary, this is a perfect opportunity to get to know more about it. Because, you know, I've got this little card here with the documentary information and Beacon. So I'm very curious about both. Mm. Obviously, I've seen the documentary for myself, but I would love for you to share a bit more about it with our audience. You know, what would be the key takeaways, especially because, you know, you've got this Beacon framework that you came up with, and you mentioned this quite a bit in the film and just now as well. Mm. So yeah, I would love to hear more about that.
So yeah, so just for people who might want to see it, it is actually available for hire at the moment, just as in recently. So howtothrivefilm.com. If you go to howtothrivefilm.com, you can hire it. I think it's like $7 or something. It's quite inexpensive. And it is a full 96-minute cinematic film. It was released in the cinemas here in Australia last year and has won a bunch of awards. So it is... I have to say, Dee's done a beautiful job, I think. You know, I think he's done a beautiful job of telling people's stories in a way that is really powerful, engaging, emotive, and also educational in the end. And that was our intent. So the documentary follows the journey of seven people who are experiencing various kinds of mental ill health. Some of them had grief and loss. Some people have eating disorders. Some people have depression, anxiety, suicidal tendencies. One person had been incarcerated for dealing drugs. And then there are people who are just dealing with, you know, life stuff, you know, being parents. And so all of them... came into what we call a Thrive Tribe. And the first thing we did is we took people away on a wilderness retreat for a weekend and really invested in the psychological safety of those people between me and them and between each other so that we could kind of make a safe space. Because as you so rightly pointed out, it's very hard for people to make changes on their own, and magic and power happens when you bring people together like that. So that's why I call it the Thrive Tribe. And I think we all need to have a Thrive Tribe around us. And so we started with that. Unfortunately, when we came out of that wilderness retreat, COVID happened and Melbourne's longest lockdown. So we didn't see each other again face to face for a long time, and that was a real challenge in terms of the program and the filming. But like everyone else, we pivoted, and those people had a six-week program that did use Beacon as well as some individual coaching, and that is the same program that we offer to people today. So if anyone wants to go through this program themselves, it's a combination of e-learning and live online community, the Thrive Tribe. And again, howtothrivefilm.com, you can find information about that. So the Beacon framework is an evidence-based framework for thriving that I developed, informed by positive psychology, neuroscience, wellbeing science. And so Beacon, obviously the metaphor, shine your brightest for yourself and for others. And there are six beams. The first one is belonging. And so that is about thinking about how we need to feel closely connected to others. So absolutely foundational to thriving is to feel that we have close connections and that those connections are authentic and wholesome and make us feel seen and safe, and that we will be soothed without judgment when we suffer, right? So that's the definition for me of belonging. And then engagement, the next beacon beam is thinking about how we all need to feel that we're engaged in something so that we get to do something that's meaningful, we get to feel like we're valued, we get to use our strengths, and having that sort of feeling of energy and being alive in life because we are engaged in something that's larger than ourselves. And the A of Beacon is accountability. And much of what we've been talking about today in terms of personal growth sits under accountability, because accountability is about the degree to which each of us holds ourselves accountable for doing the work and holding the habits that will help us to thrive. So under there we have goals, grit, growth mindset, balanced out with grace. You know, so grace means that, yes, we have to go hard after our goals, but we also have to do that with grace and compassion that says sometimes life gets in the way. Mm-hmm. And then the next beacon beam is compassion. So we need to have a balance between compassion for ourselves, particularly when we struggle, and kindness for other people. So oftentimes when people are struggling, we find they've been very kind to other people, and much kinder to other people, poured out all of their energy on others, and become depleted themselves. And so, yes, kindness is a well-being superpower. Always encourage people to be kind, but in a way that is considered and protective and is balanced with kindness for ourselves. And then the next beacon beam is optimism, and that's about thinking about having the opportunity to do things that light us up. So doing some of those want-to rather than have-to things, which is really important, again, for our brain. And what happens is, you know, opening us up when we have the opportunity to do those fun things that lift us. And finally, the N of Beacon is about the physical health aspects. So the eating, moving, sleeping, and being mindful, and the important aspects of that in terms of refueling our energy and helping us to thrive.
Yeah.
So that's the framework that we use, and that underpins all of our programs. And we now have programs for individuals, for teams and organizations, and sort of thinking about a kind of more sustainable approach, because there's an interplay between individuals and their environments. So we've got to look at it from both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. And I love the analogy that you share and the fact that you use beacon as the word for the framework. I really like that. And I think in the film you even called the participants beacons themselves, so that's probably the best part about it. We can be our own beacon. I think that's kind of a really positive message to send out there, especially because sometimes when you feel like life's hard and stressful, especially, you know, in the stage of stress, for a lot of people it's just kind of feel like you're getting pushed around all the time, so you don't really feel in control. And I think that helps to regain control in a way.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point, Lou, because, you know, I think, you know, when I created Beacon, I was thinking about the fact that oftentimes people won't put in the effort to thrive for themselves, but they'll do it for other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know that we're contagious. Our mood and our energy is contagious to other people.
Yeah.
You know, so it is really about thinking about how can I do the work and the impact that has for me and others. So, you know, a beacon shines its light and it attracts people towards it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I was thinking about with this. And also a lot of feedback around Beacon has been that, like, oftentimes people know they're not feeling great, but they don't know why. They just can't put their finger on it. So a lot of people will keep this little you know, this little card, or just even kind of, you know, writing it down and or running through it in your mind as I do. And just, you know, sometimes I say it's like a beacon bank account, you know, and just going, there's investments and withdrawals that we make, and just running through it as a measure. So we actually created a free app, which again, you can get at howtothrivefilm.com. And that app will also give you a measure of your beacon score and some little activities that you can do.
Yeah.
Because it's just a way then to go, oh, what do I need to dial up or dial down?
Yeah.
You know, oh, I'm low in belonging. I need to connect with some people.
Yeah, that sounds great. I will definitely keep this and share with my friends. Thank you for that. So I think now that we've mentioned the film, and, you know, a lot of the discussions around the neuroscience of personal growth and rewiring our brain, our audience might start wondering, okay, Marie, what is the most practical thing I can do today? And normally I ask the guests to share, but I would love to share on your behalf in this occasion and ask you some follow-up question because I've seen the film. So in the film, and as we discussed, there's this practice where your participants talk about three things that went well in their day, which I love. You know, I really love that they recounted the good things, even though they seem really mundane. And, you know, just counting the three things that went well that particular day. And I can see the sparkles in their eyes. So you were saying to me that this is a practice that you would share with our audience. So, you know, for those that are tuning in and have not watched the film yet, perhaps you can share a bit more about why this is so important and, you know, how they can practice it if they find it so hard to list out even just one thing that went well. Yeah.
Beautiful. So it is a real favourite of mine, this activity, and we call it the what went well and why activity. It might also sometimes be called, you know, three blessings or pan for gold, or there's some other names for it, but we call it what went well and why. And so, yeah, you will see participants using it in the film. It's really all it requires is to write down three things each day that went well in your day and why they went well, right? So that's how simple it is. But we can be fooled by its simplicity and think, oh God, that wouldn't really have much impact. But this is the most tried and tested positive psychology intervention. And I'll tell you why. And the beautiful thing about it is it kind of takes us full circle back to where we began, which is about rewiring our brain, you know, for thriving. So all of us, unless we've done work, have this kind of negativity bias, right? And that goes back to, you know, when we were cavemen and women and we needed for our survival to be scanning our environment for everything that is wrong. You know, where are the issues and risks and problems and what do I need to be alert to? So most of us are going around all day, every day, just looking for all the stuff that's wrong. And as you can imagine, that doesn't make us feel great. We're not thriving when we're looking for all the things that are wrong. So that's faulty wiring that we haven't been able to change unless we do this activity. So this activity is training our brain, rewiring our brain to begin to look for what is strong with us rather than what is wrong with us. And that's just, as you would have seen some of the participants in the film, you know, just it's like flicking a switch. Just like, oh my gosh, you know, now that you're asking, there was a few things that went well in my day.
Yeah.
And we, you just, because of the wiring, you just, I'll often say that it's like the bad stuff slides off like Teflon, you know, like a nonstick frying pan. And the good stuff is, the bad stuff sits onto us like Velcro and the good stuff slides off like Teflon.
Yeah.
We want it to be the other way around, right? Yeah, yeah. We want to kind of notice and savour and stretch out and share the good things. So this practice, and the beautiful thing is you only have to do it for about 7 to 10 days and you'll begin to see your brain rewiring. Mm. You'll notice something in the day and you go, oh, that's going on my list. And then when you see that happening, you know that your brain's starting to get used to panning through the day or scanning through the day and going, oh yeah, there's a little good thing. And it doesn't have to be anything monumental. It might just be I felt the sun on my face or someone bought me a cup of tea or whatever. And you can do it with your family. There's a couple of apps, the Three Good Things or Delightful app, but incredibly profound but simple activity.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I really love that practice. And I think it would be great if we all try that, you know, and even as simple as talking to our friend, our family members, our loved ones, our partners about it at the end of the day, you know, such a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you're just so tired and by the end of the day, you're like, oh, today sucked.
Yeah.
Nothing went well. That's an over-exaggeration when you're tired and stressed.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing that activity with someone else, it feels like less like a chore and more like an enjoyable thing that you can share, right?
Oh, it's so extraordinary. Good. And, you know, I used to do it with my kids, you know, when I was putting them to bed or at the dinner table or whatever, and you get completely different answers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the questions we ask are so important. And when we flip it around and ask those kind of questions, we get very different answers. And so not only is it good for us to rewire our brain, it's also really good for our relationships. And yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. Mm. Thank you for sharing all of that with us today and for talking about your film and Beacon, the framework. I'm sure our audience have learned a lot about how to rewire their brains in really simple ways. I have definitely done that today, especially after watching the film, you know, and combined with this conversation. It's kind of like reinforcing the knowledge. That's good. So we have arrived at your open mic before we let you go. And this is your platform to talk about anything you would like to share with us, as I mentioned before. So go for it, Marie.
Oh, I don't know that I have too much more to say, really, except that I guess my mission in life really is to make the science of well-being practical and accessible and easy to learn for everyone, because I just think there are too many people who don't know this yet. Mm. And it's been incredibly both sad and then rewarding, because over the years I have had so many people say to me, if I'd have known this earlier, it could have changed the trajectory of my life, you know. And I've seen people unnecessarily struggling because they haven't yet had the opportunity to learn these, what are actually fairly simple things. And so I would really encourage you as an individual, or if you are someone that is in a workplace or a family or a community and you have the opportunity to be able to bring this to people there. And as you so rightly pointed out, this is not about saying that there isn't a very important place for therapy and traditional approaches when people are struggling, but there's this whole other area of science that's remained relatively untapped. And so I would just encourage people to explore this field and to be able to see it as something that is an education, and that there's an approach around, you know, thriving that is education, not therapy. And then I want us to all kind of nudge towards thinking more about what's strong rather than what's wrong. And that's what I make my mission, and that's what gets me out of bed every day. And so thank you for giving me the opportunity to share what I know, and, you know, the beautiful opportunity that I've had to share this work with others and to see the powerful positive difference that it's been making. And that's just completely joyful for me.
Yeah, beautiful. Mm. Thank you so much. And if our audience would like to find out more about your work, I know you've mentioned the website, howtothrivefilm.com. Mm. But if they would like to connect with you on some other levels and get in touch with you to do some work, where should they go?
Yeah, so I have a website as well, mariemcleod.com, which is MarieMcleod.com, mariemcleod.com, or on Instagram, it's MarieMcLeod_how to thrive. And so you will find either MarieMcLeod.com or howtothrivefilm.com, you'll find ways to make contact with us. And we try to make, you know, things really accessible for people. So as I say, you'll find the free app on there, as well as links to our programs. So yeah happy
Beautiful.
To hear from anyone.
Yeah, thank you for coming on and sharing about everything that you've worked on, as well as how to rewire our brain.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me here.
You have been listening to Doing Well, the Wellbeing Science Insights podcast, produced by the Wellbeing Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 Life Management Perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, YouTube, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, share, and subscribe to our channel so that other people can find it and we can continue to provide quality content. More of our work can be found on our website, we.lmsl.net. where you can join our movement. I'm Lungo. Thanks for tuning in.